Once more into the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And at this point, we're supposed to take our clothes off or at least do a disclosure. And the disclosure is that that means unhide stuff. That the Personal Wealth Coach is not merely a radio program on Saturday mornings that I'm sure you all love to listen to.
Either that or your radio is broken and you cannot change the channel.
And you can't turn it off.
Right.
Right. Okay. It is also the name of a registered investment advisory firm registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. That's our prime regulator. We're supposed to let you know. So if you have a complaint, you can call the SEC and complain. And I'm sure Mary Jo White will be excited to hear about your complaint. Anyway. So now you know who we are and where we are and what we do and that we have dual personalities. Actually, we have a quadra personality because there's actually two of us in here and each of us has a dual role. So that makes for a quadratic equation, and that's the way this entire program goes. So actually, we have a phone.
Right. We're going to attempt to use it this time around.
Yeah. And you can call in at 254-773-1400. And raise issues, ask questions, complain, moan, comment, whatever you want to do, as long as it's about something to do with economics or investment. Now, if you call in and you want to know the statistics for a sports team, you're going to get irrational data.
Unless you consider the gross domestic product of the United States a sports team.
Right. So there's where we are. Well, did anything happen this week?
Yes. We had a whole week. Imagine that. This last week, and this is very different from the week before, because the week before we had a different week than we had this week.
We did. And last week, the Standard Poor's 500 stock index rose 3.8%. And this week it only rose 3.8% drop. It rose 0.81% this week. Which, of course, caused the news media, at least the ones that I read that write about such things, bemoan the fact that bad things are happening and the post-Trump bump momentum has been lost and the world will probably soon come to an end, or on January 20th, whichever comes early.
Right. My response to most mumbo-jumbo like that is, blah, 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 blah. You don't know what's going on, and you're trying to fill words into space just so that it sounds like it. That's what most of these mm-hmm. pundits are doing. If folks have been listening to us for very long, we've predicted the post-election bump, regardless of whether it was Clinton or Trump. There's a lot of cash sitting there, and people were uncertain. As soon as the uncertainty goes away, we have a bump. We also said it's probably going to be relatively short-term until we see what the policies come out to. This has not changed just because we've decided on one of the candidates.
Hey, I like a 0.81% rise.
Me too. I mean, multiplied out, that's a big one. Now,
if it just got 0.81% a week rise in the market, we would have a 50% gain in the market in 1 year.
Right, but now everybody listening knows that that's a ludicrous statement. You don't
get it. It's a what statement?
Ludicrous. He's a rapper.
Ludicrous.
Right, ludicrous. It's a ludicrous statement to say, or we could say ludicrous, a Luddite Chris.
I like Ludacris.
Ludacris.
I got to put
that
up.
He's a rapper.
Okay.
You can look him up.
I will.
Ludacris. Anyway, the idea that we would have a repeated week of earnings in the market or upward movement in the market forever for 52 weeks is a little bit of insanity. But
people believe in it, though.
They do. But to ignore the fact that we had this second relatively large jump in the market, but it's not as big as the other one, so the pundits say, oh, this is a bad thing. We just had a really good week, and you're calling it a bad thing.
Well, one of the things that I wrote about in the newsletter this week, we trade these things back and forth with until nearly the wee hours of the morning until we get it out.
By the way, last night I rewrote a big chunk of it and then deleted all the stuff that I rewrote because you had it all covered completely adequately and better than I was going to have it. So
That's okay. I wrote a whole big chunk and deleted it and then rewrote it too. We're admitting to our, you know, this is why the productivity has not risen in the United States. We rewrite this letter collectively probably four times.
Right. Well, what we could do to increase productivity is keep all of the rewrites and keep them as a blooper reel. Then our productivity for blooper reels would go up and we could start counting that as actual work.
Well, you know, one of the bad things about having change is I can't do what I was kind of thinking about doing. You know, when we're not here, we can rerun a radio program.
Right.
I was thinking maybe we could just wait 6 months and run the same newsletter again and change the date on it. Nobody would notice. I mean, the market wasn't going anywhere.
Really,
nothing was changing.
Very clearly could be done for slow news weeks. And I think there's a lot of newsrooms that do that. They just, in the economics world, they say, nothing's happened. Now, I think there are some big things that have come up. You mentioned a couple of them in the newsletter, there's a couple more that you didn't mention.
Well, let's talk about, I want to talk about the markets in a little perspective for just a second before we move on.
Okay.
I think it's important. I do write this this is my little portion of the letter. If you had invested in mid-February of this year, and this is a hypothetical investment, not a real one.
Because you can't really invest in the way you're about to say.
Right. We just talk about the S&P 500 stock index. And I realize that there are funds and ETFs out there that track this thing pretty closely, but none of them are perfect. So let's just talk about the index itself.
Okay.
If a hypothetical person had invested in the index.
Wait, do I know this hypothetical person or are they truly hypothetical?
It's actually you do. You claim to be that person from time to time. It's nobody.
Nobody. Yes, okay. Nobody.
Since nobody can invest directly in the S&P 500.
This is that nobody that can do it.
Right. So right. If nobody had invested.
Got it.
Okay. If a person named Nobody had invested in the S&P 500. In mid-February, when, by the way, you may recall the world was about to come to an end and civilization as we know it was about to become extinct because the price of oil was dropping.
They don't recall that.
Yeah, but
we have to remind them, and even then they're like, I vaguely remember some sort of vague fear or another. It was a big fear back then.
And it was almost as bad. Pretty much the same results would have occurred had you invested a year ago when the world was going to come to an end because China was going to implode. The same China that we're thinking is probably growing too fast now. Had you invested in mid-February and you looked at your gains in the S&P 500, not even counting dividends, you would see roughly a 20% gain today.
Yep. Yeah.
Now, that's in about 9 months. Now, had we back...
It was down at the time, so it's
point is that if you had decided to invest when everybody else didn't want to invest, when people were running and there was fear and... the news media were proclaiming the end of life as we know it, then you'd had about a 20% gain. On the other hand, if you went back roughly 19 or 20 months to May of 2015, and I really know nobody remembers May of 2015 except us, but because that was just so long ago.
That's like decades ago, wasn't it?
You realize there's a gap. When something is long enough ago that we can't remember it, but it hasn't made the high school history books yet.
Right.
So that's
nobody knows about that time.
Right.
It's a little blind spot in history. It's not quite history yet because it's not in a textbook, but it's not in our memories anymore. So
in May, we had a burst of irrational exuberance of 2015, and I don't even – there wasn't any particular reason for it. It just kind of happened. But had you invested in mid-May of 2015 in the same S&P 500 index, had you been able to do so, and you brought it forward today, your gains would have been 2.4%, which is roughly a little less than what inflation ran during that same period. So after accounting for the fact that things cost a little more now than they did in May of 2015, you would have lost money. And therein is a great and a very important thing to understand. A lot of times people say, well, the market's up, but I don't understand why my portfolio isn't up as much as the market over a certain period of time. First off, you're not invested in the market. Secondly, when you invested or when you added to your investments,
you're
becomes
invested,
a really important thing.
You're not invested in the whole market. It's like if somebody shops at HEB and the prices all go up at HEB and people don't realize it because their prices didn't go up. Well, you're not buying everything at HEB. That's what he means by not invested in the market.
You're not invested in the market. You're invested in individual or mutual funds, individual stocks or mutual funds that are themselves in the market. But the point I wanted to make is the index we call, sometimes referred to as the market, like the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones Industrial Average, is not what you invest in. And secondly, when you invested or when you added or took money out has a dramatic effect on your total return. And the more aggressive your portfolio is, in other words, broadly stating, the higher the percentage of stocks in your portfolio, the more you're going to see that occur, which is one of the reasons that a good investment management firm will put a bunch of stuff in there that's not in the stock market. It's not S&P 500 members. Things like bonds are, right now bonds are a little scary, so something else is an alternative to bonds. Something that will have at least the potential to go up when the market goes down, and this is the part people don't like, go down when the market goes up.
Right.
And you say, why in the world would you want to do such a thing as that? Because by smoothing out the ride, a lot of things you can't control won't have as much of an effect. For example, a lot of times you can't control when you need to take a lump sum out of an investment portfolio. A lot of times you can't control when a lump sum arrives to be invested. And the more aggressive and volatile your investments are, the greater the effect those lump sum moves in or out of the market will have, and you could just, inevitably, with Murphy's Law being in place, if you have a sudden need for a lot of money, the market will be down. And if you have a sudden influx of money that you want to invest, the market will be up. I mean,
that's Murphy's Law.
So the point is, it's important to take a look and realize that the S&P 500 is up. By the way, it's up about 4-point-something percent or 5-point-something percent for the 12-month period, which is not too terribly impressive. But you see these highs and lows, and you see the reporting in the news media, and you say, oh, wow, the S&P 500 is up 20% since February. And by the way, when we roll around to February of next year, if the market continues to rise even a little bit, you're going to see some really impressive one-year returns, and you may look at your portfolio and say, why did my portfolio do that? Well, because you didn't drop a big lump sum in mid-February.
Right.
And right when people were being terrified and wanting to take money out. So there's a couple of very important things to take away from that we talk about this a lot to our clients, and it's very important for any investor to realize. When everybody is fleeing the market is the worst time to take money out, and it is generally,
it's the time that feels best to do it, but it's the worst time to actually do it.
And most people don't have a bunch of money sitting on the side. Said, well, I'll wait until everybody is panicked and terrified before I invest the money. People just don't do that very often. Now, professionals do, but most folks just don't do that. It takes a lot of faith and a lot of intestinal fortitude to do that. So what can you do when the market plunges to improve on the situation? Probably the most effective thing to do is turn the TV off.
That's one part of it. If you're taking money out of your portfolio, you stop taking out of market positions. That's why you want to have what you just said a minute ago, something that goes in the opposite direction of the market so that you can take money out of that. If you're using this thing for income, it's a different ball game, although I'm not sure there are any balls involved.
It's really big league.
It's big league.
You got to say that correctly, big league.
It is a different game. It's a different method of management when you're taking money out than when you're putting money in. You want to have some stuff allocated to the side for when the market goes down. Hear me clearly there. I did not say if the market goes down. I said when the market goes down.
Oh, you're such a pessimist.
I am a realist.
This could go on forever.
Those are the crazy people. When people say that this market downturn or upturn, it doesn't matter which, is going to go on forever, they need to have their brains examined. The concept there that we're going to do anything forever in the market is silliness. So coming at it, and notice I use silliness rather than ludicrous here. So just for
I'm glad that silliness replaced ludicrous because it is a more appropriate.
We need to make a rap group called Silliness, and they can either open for ludicrous or replace him at some venue. Then we could finish up this whole concept. All right, so some other news happened. We had this big upturn in the market. We have, even though people consider it a downturn because it wasn't as big an upturn as the last big upturn.
Market gains dropped by a large percentage.
Recognize that headlines and pundits make money by telling you bad news.
Yeah.
There is reality underneath the bad news. There are other folks that are pure optimists that just are nothing can go wrong forever, and that's not real either. You got to dig through this stuff. It, you know, it's just finally hitting the headlines about the fake news on Facebook and other places, and I'm kind of going, most people on Facebook knew about the fake news for a long time. There was just a small percentage of people that keep posting it, and people keep reading it, even people that know there's fake news out there and keep believing it.
And unfortunately, there's still stuff going around on other sites and through email.
Still on Facebook. They haven't fixed it yet.
They haven't?
No, they're talking about how they want to fix it.
Hmm. Well, you know, it's difficult. We older people like myself, baby boomers, grew up with our image of the media shaped by Walter Cronkite, and Walter Cronkite had vetted all the stuff that he was reporting and made sure it was correct before he opened his mouth and said it.
It's easy when you only have one or two other people to compete against as far as the news goes every night. You can take your time, make sure you get it right. You can craft the way you present it in a great way. When you're competing against literally millions of other people that are all trying to get the news out at the same time, just watch your email folder when you open it up and you've got 12 emails about the same thing and everybody feels like they're the ones that are the first ones to tell you.
And the point is that in this media saturated world where it's important, I mean, when you're getting a lot of false data, and not just from Facebook, I find it fascinating to... I subscribe to the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, the Economist, and I don't have to subscribe because it's free. I go to Fox and USA Today. It's really hard to believe they're all reporting on the same world at the same time. Some of them must be in a different universe.
They are. They're in different states from each other.
Oh.
They're in different communities. They have different personalities. It's the lens through which they look is warped.
Is
all of our lenses are warped.
Is that the lens Wooly?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a bully lens. Anyway, maybe he'll call in. The point we want to make is we're living in a world where you're going to get a lot of sensationalist stuff that we used to call tabloid. And unfortunately, you really need to vet it and research it before you repeat it.
Now, there's some good news about that. Good news about the fake news is that the boring news is rarely in the fake news. And we get to...
That's good.
Yeah, we get to report the boring news, and nobody's going to fake it because it's too boring to fake.
I got some really good boring news.
Me too.
Okay.
Really, really good stuff.
Well, I got a big headline announcement.
Okay, you go first. You're very excited. Hold yourself. Okay, you ready? Go for it.
McDonald's has changed their business model.
Yes, they have.
This is big news. This is earth-shaking. When you go into McDonald's...
I've got some earth-shaking news later.
Apparently in Europe, they've already done this, and they're starting to make the changes in the United States, and they've already made it in several places in the United States. You go up to a screen, and you are a machine, and you tap in your selection, and then you take a little thing, and you go sit down at the table, and they bring the food to you. This is a new innovation, 21st century. Nobody else has ever thought of this before.
It's like sit-down dining?
It is, exactly.
Fast food restaurant?
Right. Only they admit it's going to have a very low impact because about 80% of their revenue comes from drive-thru.
Right.
So I just thought I would say, you know, McDonald's was actually the leader, the first major restaurant chain, that's what they call them, that's how they started, with the idea of you walk up to a counter, you make an order, they produce the food, and they hand it to you, and you go wander off wherever you want to with it. That they have totally turned around and gone to the put your order into a machine and then go sit at the table and we'll bring your food to you.
Right. It's fine dining at your McDonald's. All right, I have some. This is a different set of news that I was than I was going to do, but it is earth-shaking.
Okay, I'm waiting.
Oklahoma residents hit by quakes sue 27 energy companies. So I wanted to hit this because it's important. There are a lot of conservatives that are upset at activist states that are trying to stop fracking, hydraulic fracking. Okay, now let's rewind that and remove the fake stuff. So
you did that really well.
Thank you.
Okay.
The thing that is being proven, and it is the evidence is pretty overwhelming, that causes earthquakes in this drilling process is not the drilling and is not the removal of the oil. That is fine.
Mm-hmm.
They use a series of caustic chemicals, just the way you need to do it when you're hydraulic fracking, to kind of decay and dissolve the rock. And they use different caustic chemicals to do this for natural gas than they do for oil. So they do both of them. Well, then you have this soup, this nasty soup that nobody wants to eat. You got to dispose of it somehow.
This stuff that comes out of the rock when they pump the oil out.
Right. Well, what we've been doing across the board in the United States with hydraulic fracturing is that, well, you've got a big hole down there. You just pulled a bunch of stuff out of it. Why don't you just put all this soup back into it? That's what causes the earthquakes. Because the people that reuse their soup, the people that and this is my term for it these days, their soup, they're reusing it. They go on to the next well and use it again. It's more expensive to transport it, but then you don't have to buy the new caustic chemicals. So it kind of evens out in the mix. The people that are moving it from one well to the next and reusing it are not causing earthquakes. But the people that only have one or two wells, they use the chemicals, then they don't want to get rid of it because you can't just dump this in the stock tank or
you
will make a hole that goes down to China.
And you'd have a lot of dead stock.
Right.
Which would be bad for the stock market.
Very bad for the stock market.
Right.
So they're saying, well, what do we do with this? It costs a lot of money to dispose of it. There's not a market to sell it to other oil folks because if we did sell it, then they'd know which caustic chemicals we're using, and that's a trade secret. So the real issue isn't hydraulic fracturing. It isn't fracking for oil. The real issue is how you dispose of the stuff that you use to get the oil and natural gas out. And if you put it back in the ground, you're going to cause earthquakes. And that's just something that is clear now. It's not something that is theoretical anymore. If you go to the NOAA site or any of the seismological research sites and you see where the epicenters are, and then you separately go to Google Earth and your Google Maps for that matter and use the satellite view and you zoom in on exactly the coordinates of each of these earthquakes, and you will find that they're within the draw field of hydraulic fracturing sites. It's there. It's every time in Oklahoma. And Oklahoma's having lots of earthquakes now.
I think it's just because it's Oklahoma.
It could be.
Because they're not having earthquakes in West Texas.
There are states that have outlawed putting that stuff back in the ground.
Mm-hmm. It's also illegal to dump it in the streams, though.
Right. You can't put it in the streams. You can't put it back in the ground. And the states that have said you can't put it back in the ground don't have earthquakes from hydraulic fracturing. So
right. This
is just a learning curve, folks. And we can make it a political issue. We can say the Democrats don't like hydraulic fracturing. They don't like natural resources. The Republicans love them, so there's nothing ever wrong with them. Or the Democrats, there's nothing ever right with them. Or we can get real. Hopefully, we're past that polarity of the last election, and just say, how do we fix this so that we can stay in competition with OPEC so that our oil prices stay low and we don't cause earthquakes? And there are ways to do it, folks, and it's not that complicated. I mean, you can start a consortium that just puts a big tank of caustic chemicals that everybody comes and takes it there. Or there's lots of things that can be done just at the industrial level because there's no laws against any of this stuff yet. Let's figure it out. Let's get ahead of the laws and do it better than what the laws are going to do so that we can stay profitable in oil, so that we can stay ahead of OPEC. Iran just came out.
What did you say? You rent Iran?
Iran.
Okay.
The nation that with
Okay. Yes,
they're exporting a bunch of heavy water because they have too much of it, and it's a violation of the treaty, so they have to get it out really quickly. It's very. Mm-hmm. But they're also saying that there's no cap to the price of oil. If we can get all the oil producers, OPEC and everybody else, to just cooperate. And they want to reach out to the shale folks here in Texas and in Dakotas. And
who they don't understand very well, pretty clearly.
They really don't understand us very well.
And we understand them less because none of those guys in West Texas that I know of speak Farsi.
Or Urdu or any of the other languages Urdu that are spoken around. And the concept here is that they say, yeah, there's no problem. All we have to do is have a giant, massive monopoly, bigger than the one we already have. Then we can charge whatever we want.
Actually,
just look at De Beers and Diamonds, hey.
Look at the beers?
De Beers. De Beers.
Look at De Beers.
This is Chicago stuff here. De Beers.
Look at De Beers. Which beers do you want me to look at? I like dark beer, actually. It's one of the things that I think we geeky economist types like to look at is OPEC generated fracking. Meaning, those of you who remember when OPEC slammed us in 1973.
Yeah.
Us old guys who
I don't remember it, but I remember reading about it.
I remember it very clearly. Gas lines, the price of
I have gas lines to my house.
Just before, I mean, this was lines at gas stations and cars.
Oh, right,
you had to wait
right.
30 or 45 minutes to get gasoline. And just before that, gasoline was at the Shamrock stations in the local area, and the Shamrock's now gone. It's now something else. But the Shamrock stations were 25 cents a gallon. So for a dollar, you could get 4 gallons of gasoline, which would take you about 40 miles.
Wait, 40? Yeah, maybe less than that. No, I got
miles to the gallon was about what my car got.
Okay. I had an older car that had 8 miles to the gallon from the same time period. Okay. It was a little newer than that time period, actually.
Well, actually, it probably worn out. But this is the point. The price of oil did indeed rise, but what happens in an economy when you try to establish a monopoly, as they did, in a at least partially free market economy, you run the price of something up high enough, somebody, particularly in the United States, is going to figure out how to produce it at a cheaper price.
Right. That's what we do here.
And I remember for so many years, I kept reading that the United States had the largest unusable oil reserves in the world. As a matter of fact,
shale oil. We used to talk about it on the air.
Yeah, we had so much shale oil, we had more oil than Saudi Arabia did.
But we didn't know how to get it out of the ground.
But the current technology at that time
too expensive.
Was so expensive and would take so much water that it's impossible for us to effectively use it.
And the rest of the world still doesn't know how.
And so what happened was, actually, a small oil company down in Houston, I don't remember the name of it, figured out that if you pump enough high-pressure nastiness into the rocks, they'll split apart.
And release
the And the oil the will come stuff. into the gap, and they can then pump the oil out of there. And if they keep the pressure up, the oil will continue to flow into the hole in the rock, and they can just keep pumping it out.
And there's really no end to that. As long as you have shale, you'll have more oil.
And it's all because somebody forced the price of oil up. And people in the United States, in Texas specifically, I will say this for Texas, we do this a lot. Somebody in Texas figured out that, hey, I bet there's a way to get that oil out of there. Let's just figure it out. And the technology changed, and the pumping methodology changed. And by the way, this is one of those weird things. The high pressure systems that are necessary to do fracking were not developed to do fracking.
No.
They were developed to do deep water oil searches, which is what we started to do because the price of oil was so high and we needed more oil.
But that's really dangerous, and the fact that you do a big spill can cause many billions of dollars of damages to the company doing it.
So it's really fascinating to me, at least, and I think to us, to watch something evolve where something clearly has happened and the bad guys have won. And
then we come out of the shadows and say, hey, we got you.
And I think one of the fascinating things, if we continue the growth in oil production in the United States that we've seen,
we may develop a certain level of disinterest in what we historically have called the Middle East.
What do you mean, may develop?
I'm trying to say...
Look what's happening right now.
I'm Mr. Compliance Officer. I am trying to be very, very circumspect.
There was a major terrorist attack on an oil pipeline in Iraq. There was a major terrorist attack on an oil export facility in Nigeria this week.
Really?
You know, when you just said we may develop a disinterest...
That used to cause huge spikes in oil prices and...
It didn't even hit the news unless you were looking at the industry newspapers, looking at the industry websites to say, whoa, that just happened, and the price of oil dropped. So this tells you something. We are now in Iran, in their great optimism. They said there's no cap to the value of oil if we can all cooperate. We could see $55 a barrel again.
55?
Right. That's their optimistic viewpoint.
Well, I think what they don't realize...
Not 120 like it was just a couple of years ago.
If you keep Americans working at how to make things profitable that didn't used to be profitable...
It's going to be hard for them to stay.
Then we could get back to... And this is something that I don't know if we're going to see it again. But we saw oil prices go up into the 70s and 80s back in the 1970s, which people were forecasting $100 a barrel oil and how it would destroy the economy. And then Americans got involved in deep water drilling and figured out how to do something that was previously considered to be impossible. Oil dropped back to $20 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, could we get back to $20 a barrel oil? This is what I have to say.
We came close a couple of times recently.
We already did.
Right. If you throw in inflation, absolutely.
If you throw in inflation, oil today is less expensive than it was back when gasoline was 25 cents a gallon.
Right.
And as a result...
What's more?
What?
There's more? More to that. Not only is it less expensive if you just throw in inflation, if you throw in... The number of miles that we drive on that amount of oil, it's a quarter of the price of when it was a quarter.
And that's the other thing about economics that I love. You run the price of oil up to the point where gasoline gets to $4 a gallon, which is what it got to, and American car manufacturers will go, aha, we can get people to replace their cars by giving them something that gets an absurd quantity of miles per gallon.
And then when the oil prices drop again, those miles per gallon doesn't drop again. Some people will go back and buy SUVs, but even the SUVs are now more gas efficient.
Absolutely.
A lot more, because they had to compete when the oil prices were high. And this is going to be a cycle where the automotive manufacturers are trying to keep up with the oil prices, figuring out how to arrange themselves, and the oil price will then suddenly drop, and so they relax for a little while, and then the oil prices come back up. And the reality is there is a cap on oil right now. And that is a really good piece of news, because when oil prices stay down for extended periods of time, it makes it less expensive to do business, whatever that business is. And we got to play some commercials, but there's another really big piece of news that I wanted to throw in. It wasn't in the newsletter.
Bigly. All right.
Housing starts.
Yes. The battery apparently was reattached and the carburetor was cleaned out.
It started right back up again. Well,
we had fuel injection. I'm not sure which.
We had a year-over-year rise in housing starts. What does that even mean? People who are housing starts, they just stay in the same spot. When people start building a house, they have to go through a whole series of processes.
Processes.
Okay. They have to get a loan. Sometimes they buy with cash.
And they have to contact the loan arranger.
When it's a housing start, they also have to hire a bunch of people or machines sometimes to come in and build the house.
Hire a machine?
Yeah, and a lot of times they hire machines these days.
Oh, okay.
Prefab homes are not trailer homes anymore.
They're being manufactured
by machines in a big facility, and they send out all the walls and all the roof trusses already attached together in the right way, and then you just attach them on the site.
I got you. Okay.
So a lot of money is spent in a lot of different places. It's not like an existing home where money is spent, but it goes to one person who's likely to spend it on one or two things immediately following. In a housing start, when they begin the process of building a house, this money goes through a lot of people's hands. It gets trickled all the way through the system, not trickle down, trickle across. Housing starts are one of the best of the leading economic indicators, and we've been low on this for a long time. Housing starts year over year were up 25.5%. Now, the month before, they were up 10%. These are pieces of news that when you and I look at them, our eyes get really big. We get really big smiles on our faces, and other people go, I have no idea what you're talking about. This is the kind of news that means no matter what happens in the next couple of months in other areas, there's a boost already aimed at us. It's like somebody turned on the faucet way down there and we're at the other end of the hose. All you have to do is wait and the water's going to come out. It may take a bit to get here, but that's what leading indicators are. We just watched the faucet turn on, and it got turned on full blast. That's good news, and it has nothing to do with the presidential election. A lot of people are pointing at Trump or at Hillary Clinton and saying, she didn't get elected, so this is good, or he got elected, so this is good. Really, what it comes down to is the economy hasn't shifted yet. It's still doing what it was doing before. We have to wait and see for the president.
Let's do the commercials, and then I got something which I think is interesting when I say that goes with that, okay?
Okay, and we'll be back on the other side. If you'd like to join us at any point, we have a phone in here, and a phone number, 254-773-1400, and we'll be back.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And the telephone numbers to call in here, the telephone number to, well, actually it's a series of numbers, but it's one number.
Right.
Is 254-773-1400. And you can call and comment, complain, ask questions, anything you want about anything that we've been talking about or anything of a investment or economic nature.
Right. We were talking about housing starts right before the break, and you had something that you wanted to add to that.
And I've completely forgot what it was.
No, I've got some more to add to it as well.
Yeah. It's I think big news. If you want to take a trip to Europe or Canada, it's a great time to do it.
The euro is trading at $1.04 to the euro.
Just a little bit over the weekend, so it's like $1.05 point something.
It's not the weekend yet. Well, it's sort of the weekend.
It is the weekend. It's Saturday.
At the end of this program, the weekend begins.
Yeah, for us, but the rest of the world thinks it's the weekend.
So basically,
for a dollar and a nickel, you can buy a euro. Now, this is fascinating to me because about two years ago, it took $1.40 to buy a euro. And it had been $1.40 for some time. It
right.
was pretty stable at $1.40. Now it's down to pretty close to a dollar, and there's a lot of discussion that in the near future we may see $1, 1 euro as the standard. Well, the thing is, if you look at what a euro buys in Europe, it buys a lot more than a dollar buys in the United States.
Yes.
And, man, it used to be very, very expensive. We went to Europe a number of years ago. And it was relatively expensive to do anything over there because the dollar was kind of in the pits. And if you use a Visa card or something, you get an instant exchange rate click. And, you know, it's kind of mind-boggled when I saw it in dollars.
Yeah, right now, buy $1 buys $1.35 worth of things in Canada.
And so if you want to go to basically almost anywhere else in the world besides the United States, you can do so on the cheap.
That makes it hard to export.
Well, we can export tourists.
But we can import a bunch of stuff.
Oh, yeah. And this is going to tend to hold inflation down in the United States. It's also going to make it hard for small businesses in the United States to compete by making things.
For the rest of the world.
The dollars, well, even in the United States, if I'm making something and it costs me $20 to make it and I want to sell it for $25, but the dollar goes up and the price of the same thing or something similar being imported from someplace else drops to, which it did, basically $15. Ouch.
Yeah, well, this is where what we've been talking about for a very long time on this program comes in. there's an expense to ship things from other countries. And if you think for a minute about labor costs, and you say the labor costs have to be tremendously less somewhere else to make it still profitable to send the manufacturing overseas, and then ship that item back across major oceans, the biggest oceans on the planet in many cases, bring them back over here and sell them at a rate that's less expensive than what's made in the United States. That there's a limit to that. And the limit is when we have the robotics available, and they're coming online very quickly, a lot of those jobs that went overseas are going to disappear. They're just not going to be there anymore.
Now, they're going to come back. You said it earlier. You're going to have to hire a machine. Now, this is the
question.
You'll
have to hire a machine. That's right.
This will eventually, maybe this goes to the Supreme Court one of these days. If you hire a machine that was made in China and it has not got a proper green card, did you just hire an illegal alien?
You may get to that at some point, but most of these machines are originally made somewhere else, and then they are used to make the machines here.
Right. But
so we're making machines with machines here, and sometimes the original machines were made somewhere else, but the upgrades to them are made here. And so
if all the parts are made in China and a machine is assembled here, I guess where it's born would be where it has its citizen. I mean, if a corporation and
what is born?
Well, when it comes off the assembly line and starts functioning. See,
okay, well, if the machine that makes it is Chinese, but it's made in the United States, is it Chinese or American?
Well, it's in the United States. It's geographically in the United States. You know, I mean, this is my point. If the Supreme Court has held, and it has held, that a corporation is a person and can contribute money to political campaigns because it's freedom of speech, because it's a person protected by the Constitution.
Right.
How far down the road do we go before a machine becomes a person?
Well,
and then we have to make sure you check your green cards on your machines that come in.
I realize that you're being
facetious
here, but the reality is that there are a lot of people that were upset about the corporation being a person rule. And these are the same people that were really happy about the unions being a person rule.
Mm-hmm.
Corporations are people because otherwise they're just a stack of paper. By themselves, a stack of paper is nothing. It won't create profits. It won't do anything. It will sit there and do nothing. The people involved with that paper, set up with that paper, get to make decisions. The money belongs to people. The corporation belongs to people. And it has the voice of that large group of people. And there was some stuff that was passed years back about unions that said unions are allowed to contribute to candidates and so on. And then the Reform Act for what was it called? Something money raising. I can't remember the name of the law. McCain was part of it.
McCain Feingold.
Right. McCain Feingold, the campaign finance contribution laws, which they did not believe, and they're quoted at the time, they did not believe that it would make it past the Supreme Court. Because it's limiting free speech, very clearly limiting free speech, that you aren't allowed to give to candidates, or you're not allowed to say things about good things about a candidate on the air. Cabinetry. The cabinet members and
the president and is cupboards. Building is in the cabinet building business right,
he's,
now.
He's in the middle. He's got cupboards coming out of for his cabinets. And anyway, the idea there that caused a lot of the left wing to get really upset because a corporation was deemed a person is the same thing that a lot of the left wing was celebrating when unions were given the right to have a voice. They're basically set up in the same way. In fact, unions are generally incorporated. So to apply a standard to one corporation and not another, the Supreme Court said that doesn't make any sense at all. That this is one of the strengths of our system, is that any change that we make is going to be reviewed, and then it's going to be reviewed again. And then everybody that gets on the opposite end of it, and this is the Affordable Care Act is a good example of this, and we talked about it when it was passed back in 2010, it goes through Congress with not a single Republican vote in the House.
4 minute stations.
And not a single Republican vote in the House is something that always means something. It always means something. It's the same as not a single Democratic vote in the House. Forever, that will be a contentious issue. It will come back. It will be reviewed. There are parts of it that are going to be scrapped or the whole thing will be. In this case, it was such a broad law that it's unlikely that the whole thing will get scrapped, and it's been too long. But a big chunk of it is going to be replaced. We hope that it's replaced for the better. There's my little soapbox. My feet feel much cleaner from standing on that soap for so long.
I'm really impressed. Hey, we have a lot to discuss in the second hour. We're running out of time for this hour, but there's a lot of things that are certainly fascinating. But one of the things that I should warn you about, I think, is most of the stuff, and I say stuff, that you're reading or hearing about what the Trump administration or the Republicans are going to do.
Bless you. Bless you again.
Oh, excuse me. That caused me to sneeze. Are worthless.
Yeah.
Because
pure speculation.
One of the things we have clearly started to grasp at this point is the campaign rhetoric and the actualities of what's going to happen are going to be quite different. That's true of any president when he or she is elected, and it's always been a he. And it's going to be more true this time because the rhetoric is more extreme. For instance, President Trump has backed off on the idea of deporting 11 million illegal aliens. He simply now says he wants to deport those who have committed crimes, which, by the way, is the existing policy.
Yeah, that's Obama was doing that. And if you look at the last 4 years, we've had more deportations under the Obama administration than every other administration combined.
Mm-hmm. So, and I know some people are questioning the accuracy of that statistic. I've checked it, and it is accurate. It doesn't count people caught who are right at the border. It counts the people that they're extracting from the economy.
Right.
The point is that there's nothing to be afraid of at this point. There are some things going to happen that are going to be scary, and I don't care which side of the aisle or which side of the political spectrum you're on. We're going to see some change, and that, in essence, is a good thing. We'll talk about that in great detail, hopefully, next hour.
Right, and we're about out of time this hour. We are not just a radio program. This is the Personal Wealth Coach, and we're also, the two of us in here, are also the principals at a registered investment advisory firm. We give advice to people of high net worths on their investments. If you would like to contact us off the air, you can reach us at
954-947-1111. Now, that's a hard number to remember. It's 254-947-1111.
You can also reach that number toll-free if you're not using a cell phone, because rates will apply, at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. There's podcasts there, and we get a lot of downloads from those podcasts. I've been pretty surprised. Thank you guys for listening. I think there must be wrong with your sanity, but hey, thank you for listening. You can also reach us directly by email at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. We really appreciate the feedback that you guys give, and it gives us great fodder for the program. Until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Your Fox News station in Central Texas, News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.